KMOX. In studio, we have a couple special guests. Sorry to give all the credit to Anita. Jim Hubbard is here. He is a volunteer with Stray Paws Rescue, and we met about a week or so ago when we were doing our show live from patios, and all of a sudden, here's this handsome man with a golden retriever who knew my name. I'm like, well, we need to be friends. And that was Jim, so we invited Jim on the show. And just for you guys out there, anything having to do with veterans, kids, or animals, you have an open door here, just contact us. We'll help you out to help them out. So thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I've been with Stray Paws since 2018, and have fostered a lot of animals over that course of time.
Good man. Good man. And who's this we have today?
This is Anita Van Buren. She's the mom of the Law and Order litter.
Mm-hmm.
She's got Lenny Briscoe, Jack McCoy, Abby Carmichael, Claire Kincaid, and then Olivia and Elliot.
And you say you've only had her for 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
She's obviously very fond of you already.
She's a very good girl. Thank you. She was dumped as a stray down in Donovan, Missouri, and the locals kind of took care of her. And then she got herself in a family way, and some woman said that she would foster her and take care of her. Well, she ended up getting dumped in the woods with her puppies.
Oh, for love.
And they asked me if I would, if I could help them out in any way, and I said, kind of hesitant to bring puppies in right now. I had Parvo in my house last fall, and Parvo is deadly to puppies, but I said, you know, it's been sprayed down twice and we'll be careful. But everybody's doing fine.
And the puppies taken care of as well?
They are.
Good.
They just got their second set of shots, so they're good to go.
Oh, boy.
Isn't that crazy? I mean, look, I'm in no ivory tower here. I'm not the world's best person, but I'm not going to dump a dog and their puppies in the woods.
No.
Like, I'm not that bad.
And there are people that will take them.
Yeah.
Right? That's the thing that's so frustrating about it. You know, we've been doing rescue for 30-plus years, too. And most of our dogs have been rescues. And it's just stunning. You're like, you just call an organization, they'll come take them.
Yeah.
A lot of places are full. Some places, some of the shelters are full, but I don't think, maybe this is what we can get into, Jim, because I don't think people really understand how many rescue groups there are. Breed-specific rescues, things like Stray Paws, and so many of them. So yeah, maybe the one shelter you called might not have room, but if you do a quick search, you're going to find all kinds of groups.
And we do a pretty good job of networking with other organizations. We'll make runs. We pull from 11 different states. And we'll make runs and we'll let other rescues know, hey, we're going out to Kansas or we're going to Texas. And we're taking this many and they've got this many. How many can you take? And then we have transporters at Letty Meeks down in Bell, Missouri. She flies dogs up to Canada, flies and drives them up to Canada.
Right. What do people need to know about adopting a stray?
We go over the 3-3-3 rule. It takes 3 days for them to understand that they're in a home. It takes 3 weeks for them to get used to you being their person. And it takes 3 months for both of you to acclimate to each other.
I love that.
And, you know, patience is
like
the
marriage.
Key. It's the absolute key.
She seems great.
She's a mellowest dog.
Yeah.
She, when she came in, her waist was so pinched, she was so starved.
Wow.
And she and the puppies were just full of worms. And, it's a process. You get them in, you get them comfortable, you get them a bath if you can give them one. If they're nursing, you really can't give the mom a bath, so you got to work around that. But, just making sure you know that everybody is vaccinated on a regular schedule and making sure that you're keeping an eye out. If something goes wrong, contact someone immediately.
Yeah.
Jim, speak a little bit about like what it's like for you personally to bring in so many dogs and foster them and build this relationship. What's it like for you when it's time for them to go to their forever home?
Well, people ask me that all the time. They said, how can you take them in and you heal them and you nurse them, you get their souls and their hearts going again? How can you let them go? And my question is, how can I not? When you find the perfect home, it's not about me. We had one that we pulled out of a puppy mill in southeast Missouri, and she was in horrible shape. And the vet said, well, you know, she may not make it through the night. She had 6 different intestinal parasites. She was heartworm positive, Demodex mange. She had flea dermatitis. Everything was infected on her. I said, what do I need to do? And they said, try to get her to drink something. So every couple of hours I was getting up, I had a washcloth and a bowl of water and just put it in her mouth and kind of worked her jaws until she started finally drinking some. And the next day she stood up. And then she looked like she was doing well. She was starting to get her fur back again. And 6 weeks later, she started to spot blood. And I thought, well, she's gotten healthy enough to come back into heat. Well, then she started to gush blood. And I took pictures and sent it to Linda at 10 o'clock at night. She contacted Jake from Animal Talk. He said, get her in right away. And they did surgery that night. It was probably about 2 o'clock in the morning, and Linda was his assistant. And what she had was hormone-induced tumors. They give them growth hormones and fertility drugs, bigger puppies and bigger litters, and then they take the puppies away too soon. So the hormones don't have time to get through their bodies, so they start to create things like tumors. And her tumors had started to rupture. And he said, you got really lucky, because if it had ruptured internally, she either would have bled out or would have gone septic, and we would have lost her.
Jeez.
And she was heavy heartworm positive, so she was on steroids for 10 months.
Wow.
And Jake looked at her and said, you got to get some of that weight off her. So we put her on a green bean diet, and she came up to the bowl, and she sniffed it, and she picked the bowl up and flung it across the room. And that was pretty funny. Until
it's understandable.
Then she picked up the water bowl, and I'm like, no, we're not going to play this game.
So, like we all said, there are a lot of rescue organizations out there. I've done work with Bulldog, English Bulldog Rescue of St. Louis. What is there anything that Stray Paws does that other people don't do? Like, what makes Stray Paws different?
Well, we take a lot of animals that are in very difficult medical conditions. I just described Dougie. We had another one that we tagged recently here. We got a call. There were 3 dogs running around a property around Potosi, and the guy said, I'm going to kill them if you don't get them out of here. We had transport on the way. He shot all 3 of them. One of them lived, but the bullet went all the way down her body and pierced every single organ. And Marty and Vicky of Summit Jewelers, they stepped up and they paid all the medical bills, and it was not cheap. And there's a lot of them take on difficult medical cases. We pulled one out of South Texas that the locals had been beating her in the face with baseball bats, and she had to have a complete facial reconstruction surgery. And when we got her in, she had cancer, so that had to be treated first.
Crazy. So you guys have a gala coming up. It's not for several months. It's in March of 2027, but it looks like a nice one. So what can people do? Do you need auction items? Do you know?
We need auction items. We need sponsors. As the time gets closer, we're going to need butts in the seats.
Yeah.
It's critical. You know, number one, it helps us to educate the community about what's going on, because a lot of people just don't know and they aren't aware. And Missouri is a puppy mill capital of the world, and we've gotten entire litters of puppies that they can't sell them, so, well, here, we'll just dump them off in a rescue and let them figure it out.
How do people get in touch with Stray Paws if they want to?
They can go to the website. If they're interested in the gala, my number and Vicky's number at Summit is on there.
Okay.
They can call. If they go out to the website, there should be some information out there now, and they can just scan the QR code, and everything about the gala will come up.
Cool. I've already complained to you guys that I gave away too many Cardinal packages for 2026. So I'm going to the baseball game every friggin' night. You guys have my first of 2027.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I love that I sound so completely drunk in that ad.
You do?
Yeah. So here's what happens. We record things, say it's supposed to be 15 seconds, and I'm pretty good. You know, Andrew and I do it together. We're pretty good at hitting the mark, but maybe this one was, you know, 16, or maybe it was 13 and a half, and then they will speed it up or slow it down. Now, I would not be mad if they said, hey, we need you to hit 15 exactly. Okay, pain in my ass, but I'll do it. But I do hate it when they slow it down and I sound like I'm drunk. It's not good for the client. It's not good for me. It's not pleasant to listen to. We're just talking about how sad it is that we need operations like Stray Paws. And you don't want to look at it very closely, which is one of the reasons that we have these problems. And, you know, again, I've always been really careful on the air over my 26 years to not present myself as like, oh, Dave's such a great guy. I don't think Dave's such a great guy. But I'm not going to punch an animal. I'm not going to shoot puppies, right? And the fact that there's more than one or two of these people in the world is really troubling, because obviously there are enough, especially here in Missouri, that we need multiple organizations and people like Vicky, who owns Summit Jewelers, to put up their own cash to do thousands of dollars worth of surgeries because a human hurt an animal. That's hard. That's hard to digest intellectually for me.
Yeah. I was telling you guys during the break, I we've worked in rescue for 30 years. We've rescued dogs, fostered dogs, and then obviously get the stories of the ones that even we didn't have, right? And you hear all these stories, and you just, it makes me want to hurt those people, and I know that's terrible, right? Like, that's not good, but that's the feeling that I get. Like, what is wrong with you? That there, if a dog is a problem that you own, you created that problem.
Yeah.
By not training it well enough, by not taking care of it, by not exercising it, whatever. So that's on you. And if you need to find a new home for it, that's okay. You know, there are some people that are like, they're embarrassed to give up the dog, but you're going to just throw it into the woods. Like, just give the dog to someone. They will take care of it.
Yeah.
A lot of vet offices don't do it. Some will. A lot of rescue groups, if they're full, will refer you to another one. All it takes is a call.
Yeah. Yeah, the dog can't speak English, so you're going to get away with it, most likely. But you have to live with that. How do you live with that? Right? I don't know. Anyway, there's a new live-action, kind of speaking of dogs, a new live-action Scooby-Doo coming out, which makes me, and this is a real question, this is not an old man like, but real question. Were my people, I was a kid, but the people who were grown-ups in the 60s and 70s and 80s, were they just so amazing at their jobs being creatives and writers and showrunners and producers that it just can't be matched? And so in 2026, rather than making a new movie, they're like, let's do the fifth Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, I don't think it's that we've reached the pinnacle of entertainment with Scooby-Doo. It's just the people running these studios want a guaranteed hit.
Yep, they want easy wins.
Yeah, it's like, hey, people love Scooby-Doo. Just crank out another one of those and people will go see it, because we are a very nostalgic culture, especially here in the United States, and we like comfortable things. So we'll keep going and seeing it. I would love to see more new stuff come out.
Yeah.
But it just feels like it feels like the studios don't take risks on that stuff as much as they used to, but we do have this new way of doing things,
right,
where it's like the back rooms guy can just become successful on YouTube and then parlay that into a successful film. So there's still options for the little guy, but the studios seem to like to fall back on the same stuff over and over.
Do you guys think it's a fair take to say that there's more crap being made simply because there's more being made?
Oh, yeah.
Just like the same percentage of crap, but we're just getting more of it?
Right, exactly. Because, you know, now you've got Netflix studios and Amazon studios and Apple Plus studios and Warner Brothers and all the big movie, you know, MGM. You have all the big ones, and then you have all of the streamers, and then you have the indies and all the independent ones and all of that. I mean, I wonder if it feels that it's like I haven't looked into it, but I wonder if it feels that way just because the numbers are up.
I would be interested in Janelle's take. She was on the stream a few minutes ago. Maybe she's there now. But my initial reaction would be there's way more entertainment than there's ever been. There's probably more good entertainment just based on the averages, like you said. I certainly haven't exhausted all the movies and television shows and series that I want to watch, documentaries and such, but we tend to be crap detectors. And by we, I mean me. And so there's just a lot more crap to detect and kind of go off on.
No, I get it. Because even if it's the same percentage, it's still a larger number.
Yeah.
and your brain registers the number.
Yep.
I don't know. Don't you ever look through like Amazon Prime or something and you see all of these series and movies you've never even heard of?
Yeah.
And you have no desire to watch any of them. And I'm just like, who made this? Who is watching this? Like, I'm not trying to be mean, but it's like, so millions of people watched this show? I've never even heard of it before.
Yeah.
And it looks bad.
Well, the other day, I thought I was being cool by saying, hey, I'm about halfway through, something very bad's about to happen. You're all like, oh, what's that about? Something bad going to happen? I'm like, hey, effers. It's like one of the biggest shows in the country right now. Do you suffer from email apnea?
What is that?
So when you hold your breath while reading an email or answering a text, and it could be quietly adding to the stress of your day.
I don't think I hold my breath when I do that.
Yeah.
Who's doing that?
I just hold my breath now.
Like people who are afraid, oh my God, what are they going to say? Mm. What's coming back my way? That kind of thing.
Oh, I feel bad that people get anxiety about that type of thing.
A prep school in New Jersey is requiring every freshman to complete a challenging 5-day trek along the Appalachian Trail before moving on to be a sophomore. They say it's a positive thing, not a punishment. Everyone is kept safe, but it is a requirement.
Dave, didn't
you say it's a private school?
They didn't say.
No.
Didn't Nick have to do some sort of camping thing?
Yes. When he was at the college school, which is a private school, they were big, I'm sure still are, on outdoors and learning things by learning things and not just taking quizzes. And at one point they went on a big giant camping trip. I'm going to say somewhere around 6th or 7th grade. I could be wrong about that by a couple of grades. No, I think they graduated. No, anyway. And at one point they have to go out on their own and sleep the rest of the night, like 100 yards away from everyone. And it's like, oh, it's my night, you know, but yeah. I'll be honest with you. Nick's mom and I weren't together when he went to college school, and she was all about it, and I was not. And she won, and she was right.
Yeah,
it was a great experience for him.
I don't see any reason why something outside of the classroom shouldn't be required. I mean, I get it. If it's a public school, you got to follow the law, follow the rules. But private school can determine all that. And to me, there's nothing wrong with saying, "Hey, you're going to do some socializing." And you're going to learn and you're going to go do some stuff. Because in the real world, you do need to figure things out sometimes on your own and learn how to do it.
Remember when I said that my ChatGPT was funny?
Yeah.
Says that more and more stories are coming out. AI can be manipulated to be funny. An AI customer service chatbot for delivery service used profanity, told a joke, wrote poetry about how useless it was, and was criticizing its own company. And they're not sure exactly how it happens, but they're saying it happens, that it's not in their code. It's like a quirk or a jump or a one-off that they put this together with this and they end up seeming funny or being funny.
Interesting.
Yeah, weird, right? Also, a 22-year-old personal trainer ate 162 Oreos in 5 minutes to break the world record.
5 minutes.
That's a lot of Oreos.
That's a lot.
You got to be dunking those in milk. They're way too dry.
Yeah. Yeah, you
there's die. Definitely something to that. Yeah,
that, they're basically having a smoothie at that point.
Tell you guys, that grossed me out.
Get inside your Redbirds in the 2026 season every Tuesday at noon. It's All Access with Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol on your voice of the Cardinals, KMOX. Bernie Miklas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the bagel loan, and by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin comfort dealer.
Welcome back, guys. DGS and KMOX. Happy Monday to you. I think it's going to be kind of rainy and gloomy all week. Dave Murray will be with us 1 hour from now, and he will let us know. Bernie Miklas joins us. Hey, Bern.
Good Monday to everybody. Good to be with you.
Bern, I want you to know that I was thinking of you yesterday, and I was listening to you on Sports on a Sunday Morning with Ackerman. And I was just, you know how I am. I'm just smitten by you guys. I just like a little boy with a crush. It's disgusting. And but I'd had a couple of gummies because it's the weekend. I can do what I want.
All right.
And I said to my phone, remind me tomorrow at 2:30 p.m. Remind me, Bernie. And so it just popped up on my phone. And for the life of me, I have no idea why I did that other than just having a girl crush. But yeah, man, I love listening to you and Aki. And I loved your, as much as I love Pajes, I loved your video about how he probably needs to go. No offense, but just to make room. And yeah, so well done, man.
Yeah, well, thank you. Boy, if you couldn't remember what you were going to tell me, can I have some of those gummies, man?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. We'll go back
Thanks. Yeah, there you go. Thanks for the compliment, man. And likewise, gosh, that's just such an honor to be on the show. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. It's one of the thrills about... most pleasing things about coming back to Camo X.
Very nice. So great weekend. You know, everyone had a blast. We swept the Reds. That's important. Byrne, what stood out to you, good or bad, from the weekend?
Well, I think when, you know, you're in a position where your homestand could go either way. You're six. You were, they had won a series and lost a series. And so you want to, man, the Cardinals got to start doing better at home. So they swept the series and they finished, you know, the homestand 6-3. So that was really good. Number two, I really thought the series would be largely determined by the bullpen battle, but I didn't think there'd be much of a battle. And that turned out to be true because the Cardinals have a vastly superior bullpen to Cincinnati. And the Cardinals hitters, as they should have, they beat the snot out of the Cincinnati relievers. Number three, I think that there was a lot. Listen, the return of Lars Nootbaar is interesting because the Cardinals are not lacking energy, but just to drop in him into the season, you know, 60 games in, who's a guy who's always been a tremendous energy source and a guy that everybody loves to play baseball with. Not that this team needed a morale boost, but it's like you're adding one more happy guy, one more energetic, enthusiastic, love to play baseball type of guy, love to have fun type of guy, but who's also really serious about playing the sport. That's always a positive thing to add him, and he was terrific. But I also thought that, you know, one thing Chaim Bloom has done, and I don't know that it's gotten enough attention, is that he has completely remodeled this team's bench. And with that, Ali Marmol has, for example, really expanded the role of Jose Fermin. He has turned him into a super utility player that makes him more valuable. But by bringing up Jimmy Crooks and, you know, bringing up Velasquez and bringing up Brian Torres and then the expanded usage of Fermin and a couple other things I could mention, you know, the Cardinals' bench and their depth of lineup, like five, six, seven, eight, nine, has gotten a lot better, and that was on display over the weekend.
Yeah, it's isn't it such a different vibe? And we, you know, look, a lot of this homestand of the latter part of it, Bernie, once Nootbaar came back on Friday, a lot of what we saw were some of the weird lineups because, you know, JJ wasn't ready to go at the beginning of the series, so you didn't really have the full look, and I don't know that we really have yet the full look of what this newly revamped lineup can look like because you're deepening it. I'm guessing, Byrne, that when you got it normal, you know, JJ's in there and you get your normal top four, they probably slot Newt into the number five spot. But then you've got Crooks, who's more of a threat than Pajes. Nathan Church is back on Tuesday. We didn't mention it yet, but Victor Scott sent to Memphis. And Church sounds like he's going to get the bulk of the run in center field. But as you point out, now you have more movable pieces and more spots where guys are, you know, Brian Torres is contributing regularly and all of that. The lineup suddenly just looks a lot more dangerous the second half.
Well, it's a small sample, but the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 spots against the Reds. And again, they're going up against a really bad bullpen all weekend. But the 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 spots of this lineup, which were no question a liability throughout the month of May, those lineup spots in this series had 2 home runs, 9 RBIs, 11 runs scored. They walked 14 times, and they had a weighted runs created plus the bottom line on that, 45% above league average offensively. Again, that's one weekend, but I think it shows you that the bottom of this lineup, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, is got the potential to be a lot more capable now.
And you have a little bit more of a threat against left-handed pitching, too. I mean, you're able to balance your lineup a little bit better. Newt's not really that split averse, so he doesn't change that dynamic in a negative way. But Velasquez has been good. You know, it's not like he's going to play every day. We know that. But where he's been used so far, he's been good.
No, he has. And I think that they're going to have choices, too. I think Ollie Marmol compared to, say, listen, they started to change this. Bloom started to change this roster around right before that series at Cincinnati.
Yep.
That's when he brought up Brian Torres. And then there's been a migration of other guys coming up. And frankly, sending guys down that needed to go down. So Ollie Marmol's just got a lot of different ways he can go. I mean, the flexible lineup, more platoon split advantage stuff, better matchup stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He can sort of tighten up the defense for the late innings with the lead. You know, he's got a lot of ways to play with this position player roster. And really, the Cardinals bullpen has been fantastic since the start of May. The rotation is better than I thought. And I'm predicting the Cardinals are going to be this incredible team, but this team just looks a lot better to me now that some of these parts have been replaced and new parts put in.
Yeah, and on the pitching side, Byrne, I mean, we're going to get to see Hunter Dobbins start this week. You know, what a valuable piece he's proven to be. That's, he's saved the bullpen each of the times he's been used. He's now earned himself an opportunity to get another start. And who knows how long they're going to try to roll with 6 starters. It's great for starters when you do that. It's not so great for your bullpen when you do that because you have one less guy out there to cover some of that load. But what we're seeing in Dobbins now, here's this guy that he's out there throwing regularly, 96, 97. He's striking people out. He's giving you some high-end performance and showing you he might be an upgrade over one of your current 5 in the second half of the year.
Well, he definitely can. I mean, some of the starters I like better than others. I mean, I don't hold back. I don't take cheap shots, but I will just say straight up, I'm disappointed in Matthew Liberatore, and I don't want to be. I want him to be terrific, but I'm disappointed in the fact that he just can't sustain any kind of consistency, you know, and I don't know why that is. The other guys are who they are, but they tend to be more consistent than he does.
Yeah, and with him, look, I'm with you on the same thing. I want him to be good. It's a critical thing if he's at least a viable fourth starter. And again, his overall numbers are fine, but there are concerning things. Like, he gives up more hard contact than 95% of the league.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a concern when your ERA is mid-4s, but when your expected is over 5, and you know your fastball doesn't fool it. You don't get anybody out on the fastball. I mean, the fastball is getting hit. Any version he throws of it is getting hit, and you know, loud contact against you is danger. It just is, even if it hasn't caught up to you yet.
Yeah, because even though the Cardinals play really good defense, I mean, they can't catch them all.
Right.
And these shots are not always going to be hit right at a defender either. So we've seen McGreevy, who definitely relies on his defense, but we've even seen McGreevy, who's been very efficient and, you know, he's pitched very well. But when he's off a little bit or the batted ball luck's not on his side, we've seen how that can kind of fall apart.
Yeah.
A couple times it has. He's the same pitcher, but it can fall apart when the defense can't save you every single time.
Yeah.
Let me ask you guys, and we don't have a lot of time. We do this every freaking time. We do this every time.
It's the nature of the beast.
I just wait till the last minute. I'm like, let me ask you guys something stupid. So let me ask, if we're a few weeks out from now, what's the most uncomfortable position for the Cardinals front office to be in as far as trading, keeping, buying? Like, what would put them in the most like, oh, God, this is close?
I think it'd be a situation where Lars Nootbaar's hot, just playing great, and the team has just responded to him, and he looks terrific. And then you have Dustin May, who I think's gotten a lot better anyway. May's pitching really, really well. I think JoJo Romero would be a tough guy to trade. By the way, Riley O'Brien's in a different category. I'm moving him aside until he can reestablish that sinker. But I just think if, like, his hottest starting pitcher and his hottest one of his hottest position players you know, to sort of pull the plug on the team and take those guys out of the mix. I think that would be a really tough decision.
Yeah.
But Wheels, I also think that if he gets an offer that he thinks is terrific for, I'm just going to say May and Newport, just hypothetically. Mm-hmm. If he gets a kind of offer he wants, I don't think he's going to be gun shy about moving him.
I wouldn't think so either. Again, you know, if you're in the same, like let's fast forward 5 weeks. If you're still the number one wild card, it might change that equation a little bit.
Sure.
But
sure.
But I don't want. I'm not saying run dusted May off. But we just talked about Hunter Dobbins. You might actually have the ability to stay level in your rotation even if you trade him, especially if Quinn Matthews continues to improve as he has, and especially if you start to get another guy or two that are progressing that give you that. And who knows what you're going to get? It's all about the return, right, Byrne? I mean, mm-hmm. Right. If somebody's offering you something significant, they may just have enough to not lose ground if they trade a starting pitcher. But I'd also, you know, that's played into what we just talked about. Yeah. With some of the guys that may or may not have troubles. And the same thing with Newt. If Joshua Baez is still forcing the hand in a month, you're like, well, it would be great to get him up here and play. And if we move Newt, we get something else. You might not ever have the fall off just depending on how it plays out.
Byrne, save me here with Rach and tell us about Zuniga. Back, DGS 251. Happy Monday. Dave Murray will be here in 35 minutes or so. DGS happy hour after this. Andrew is on a family vacation. He'll be back a week from today, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Not saying which way is correct, but here are the numbers. In a new poll, 26% of Americans say that they have achieved the American dream in their definition, which is down from 44% in 2009. 70% say the American dream is harder to attain than it was a generation ago, which is way up from about 40% who said that. So people think it's more difficult, and fewer think that they've actually achieved it, however they define that.
Yeah, that part, the fewer think they achieved it, that's a harder thing to, because it's all about how you view it, right?
Yeah.
But if you, what do we quantify as the American dream? Like, basically, what have we always thought of it as? You know, white picket fence, two cars.
I've always thought of it as owning your own home.
Being comfortable,
having a retirement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say that the people that are saying that it's more difficult are speaking the truth.
I mean, yeah, wages haven't kept up with inflation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're just talking about this actually off the air a little bit with Amy, but I think about my own, I don't know, I don't want to say privilege because it wasn't that, but like my experience as a person in their 20s, I didn't make any real money. I didn't make real money until I was mid to late 30s. I had an entry-level radio job, and when I was in my mid-20s, my wife had a basic, regular, just day-to-day job. Neither of us had a big career yet. We didn't make big money. We had a kid. We had a house. We had two cars. And I'm not sure that works today under those same job circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, you know, a couple of working adults. Susan stopped working when our daughter was born for a long period of time, because we chose that instead of just paying for it all to go to daycare anyway. But I don't know anybody that's pulling that off very easily now.
Yeah. Did you guys see the story about the kid from Heated Rivalry? Hudson Williams. He had a photo from high school resurface where he'd evidently gotten drunk and passed out, and his friends scribbled a bunch of things on his face, including an upside-down cross and a swastika. And so people are coming at him, and he is saying, look, I didn't know that I had a swastika on my face.
Yeah, I was passed out.
Right.
Yeah. Probably don't do that to friends when you're pranking them. I mean, like, obviously, there are people who say don't prank your friends. I get that, too. But definitely don't put anything problematic on there.
Yeah, it just shows, like, the purity test we have to pass these days, though, right? Like, to the point where it's like, I mean, there's so many things in this story that should let him off the hook, so to speak. Like, first of all, he's in high school. So that usually in the past, that's given people a little bit more leeway as far as like you were a minor. He was passed out, so he didn't even do it. You know, it's the kind of thing. It's like, yeah, I get that it makes people feel uncomfortable to see that type of thing, but he didn't put it on his face himself.
Right.
It feels really weird to be like, well, you should have never went to that party in the first place when you were 16. Right. Like, okay, right. Well, I'll just build my time machine and I'll take care of that for you. Like, what do you want him to say or do? I don't understand.
Taylor and Travis are getting married at Madison Square Garden on July 3rd.
Allegedly.
Totally normal.
I'll be on the edge of my seat until I hear. Yeah, I agree.
Why would you do that?
If I were advising them, but I'm not. So
you need to have 20,000 people at your wedding?
A lot of people, like a concert. Well, people think it's a way to like throw off the fans and throw off the paparazzi and they'll have it at a different location.
That would make sense.
Yeah.